On July the 31st, 1993, over 50,000 men sat in a silent, pitch-black stadium watching a single candle burn. That candle then lit another, and they each one lit others. And soon there was a flame that began to spread like wildfire across that stadium, symbolizing the influence, the tremendous impact that men can have upon one another. What a tremendous example of influence. The word influence can be found in Scripture only one time, Job 38 and verse 31. There we find God asking Job those 40 unanswerable questions. And in those questions, he asks Job, "Canst thou bind the sweet influences of Pleiades, or canst thou loose the band of Orion?" Pleiades is a group of stars in a constellation of the heavens. We don't know much about it, but the intimation here is that it affects and influence somehow upon other bodies, perhaps even upon our world and our climate. We're not sure, but one thing we know, that there is a silent, ongoing influence, and it cannot be stopped. And thus the question, canst thou bind the sweet influences of Pleiades? And every one of us, from before the time that we are born, begins to exert influence upon other people. It matters not that the word cannot be found numerous times within the Scriptures. The thought of influence permeates the Scriptures. In Matthew chapter 5, verse 13, Jesus said, "Ye are the salt of the earth." In Matthew 5, 14 through 16, "You are the light of the world." In Matthew 13, 33, he even told a parable that the kingdom of heaven is as leaven, which a woman places in three measures of meal. In 1 Corinthians 5, verse 6 says, "A little leaven leavens the whole lump." He's talking about influence. This morning, I want to challenge our thinking. As we study the sermon, you and your influence. First of all, the fact that every one of us exerts influence. Secondly, the power of that influence. Thirdly, that we need to have a good influence. And fourthly, the fact that God is going to hold us accountable for our influence. Those are the four major points. For those who are here for the very first time, I would urge you to look at the outline inserted into the bulletin. It is there, and it'll help you to see how I'm developing my thoughts. First of all, everyone exerts an influence. Romans chapter 14, verse 7 says, "No man liveth to himself, and no man dieth to himself." That means we somehow are going to influence someone in some way. We cannot hide our influence. We might be able to trade good influence for bad or vice versa, but you cannot hide your influence, you cannot lose your influence, you cannot forfeit your influence. Brother Ted Cowell one time was visiting with a woman who at one time had been a Christian, a wife, and a mother in that order, so Ted Cowell reports. But because she had not fortified her faith, she lapsed into neglect. And now she was not living the right kind of a life. And Brother Ted Kell went to this lady and sat down and began to reason with her of how she needed to repent, to confess, and to come back home. And she, in the conversation, admitted that she was doing some things she should not be doing. And Brother Kell, realizing that she had been a tremendous influence in times past, he made this statement. He says, "Not only do you jeopardize your soul by your unfaithfulness, but others are deprived of the encouragement they could gain from your influence." And then came her very unexpected answer. "I have reached the point I do not want to influence anyone anymore." But you see, she really could not ever reach that point. For as the poet has said, there isn't a word that the preacher can say, no matter how lovely or true. Nor is there a prayer that his eager lips can pray that can preach such a sermon as you. You vowed to serve Christ, and men know that you did. They are watching the things that you do. There isn't one action of yours that is hid. Men are watching and studying you. You say you're no preacher? Yes, but you preach a wonderful sermon each day by the acts of your life and the things that you say. So Christians, remember that you bear his name, your lives for others' view. You are living examples. Men praise you or blame, and they measure all Christians by you. Either knowingly or unknowingly, you are influencing everyone that you come in contact with. I'm thinking of a woman whose life was very sordid and very calloused, and it was changed into something beautiful and tender because she met a man by the name of Jesus. And the story is told in John chapter 4. She met this man Jesus because he would venture to ask a question, ask if she would give him a drink of water. But I believe that the important point of this story is not that she herself and her life was changed forever. The important thing that I see in John chapter 4 is that she went back and influenced an entire city. That's the thing. That's what Jesus wants. He wants us not only to be changed ourselves, but he wants us to go out and begin permeating and influencing the world about us. You have an influence. You have no idea the power of your influence. It is impossible to overestimate the power of your influence. Now, some of you may say, "Oh, my influence isn't like a drop of water in a bucket." Well, you know, it depends on what the drop is and what the bucket is filled with. Did you realize that a drop of water, one, in a bucket of acid can cause an explosion? Did you know that a drop of germ concentrate in a bucket of solution can, in just a little while, allow that solution to be totally infiltrated and turned into a deadly, lethal poison? On the other hand, a drop of anesthetic can change a bucket of other solution. All I'm telling you is we need to be very careful that our drop of influence is good. That's the thing. Be sure that our drop of influence is good. No two fingerprints are identical. Criminology is based upon that fact. Every fingerprint has its own unique combination of swirls and lines and curves, so that no two fingerprints are identical. And your influence is just as singular, and that's what I want you to get. You can have just as much of an impact as God wants you to have if you just are willing. Anita Roddy, you may have seen this, and I saw it as I was waiting on my wife one day. I was looking through the magazines in the doctor's office, and I saw Time magazine, January 25, 1993, and Anita Roddick has her favorite slogan. Here it is: if you think you're too small to have an impact, try going to bed with a mosquito. You know, it might be little, but it still has an impact. You can have an impact. That's all I'm telling you. And God expects you to do that. Did you know that it is estimated that every person now, in your lifetime, will either directly or indirectly influence 10,000 people? Now the question is, what kind of influence are you having? I watched them tearing a building down, a gang of men in a busy town. With a whole heave-ho and a lusty yell, they swung a beam and the side wall fell. I asked the foreman, are these men skilled? The kind of men you'd hire if you had to build? He gave a laugh and he said, no indeed, just common labor is all I need. I can easily rack in a day or two what builders have taken a year to do. And I thought to myself as I went my way, which of these roles have I tried to play? Am I a builder who works with care, measuring life by rule and square? Am I shaping my deeds to a well-made plan, patiently doing the best I can? Or am I a wrecker who walks the town, content with the labor of tearing down? Back as far as Exodus chapter 20 and verse 5, you will find God saying, I am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers to the third and fourth generations. That's telling me that our influence can be passed on to generations yet unborn. Your grandchildren, great-grandchildren, great-great-grandchildren can be influenced by some of the choices that you make. And I'm here to tell you that that has absolutely been proven. I want to give you one case point. Dr. Kinnard, K-A-I-J, I don't know how you would pronounce that, from the University of Lund in Sweden, did a study because alcoholism is so prevalent in Sweden, and he was trying to see if he could find a hereditary factor in the excessive use of alcohol there. He did not find a gene for alcohol, but he did find a real relationship between grandfathers and grandsons. Here's what he found. He found that grandsons of alcoholics are three times more likely to have an alcohol problem than the general male public. He also learned, and this really astounded me, that when those grandsons would reach into their 50s, there was a 43% chance, more chance of likelihood of them having a drinking problem. Let me give you another story. They began looking at genealogies, and they studied two men born in the late 1800s. One became a gospel preacher, and the other one an avowed atheist. They then did a study and brought those two lines down to today, and they found that for the most part, it says the exceptions were rare. For the most part, their descendants have followed along those two lines. And you think you have no influence? I'd like for us to turn now to 2 Chronicles chapter 21. In 2 Chronicles chapter 21, we find Jehoram. He's king of Judah. He is the son of Jehoshaphat. And he was a scoundrel. If you look at verse 6, you'll find it says, and he walked in the way of the kings of Israel just as the house of Ahab did, for Ahab's daughter was his wife, and he did evil in the sight of the Lord. In fact, as soon as he came to the throne, he had all of his brothers killed. Here was a man who was so wicked that after 8 years, he died at the age of 40 from an infection in his bowels that the Lord sent to him. But that's not the reason I want you to see this. I want you to drop down to verse 19 and read verses 19 and 20. Now it came about in the course of time at the end of 2 years that his bowels came out because of his sickness and he died in great pain. And his people made no fire for him like the fire of his fathers. He was 32 years old when he became king and reigned in Israel 8 years. And he departed with no one's regret. Here was a man who did the world a favor when he left. His influence was bad. Will Rogers is credited with saying, you can judge a man's greatness by how much he will be missed. Proverbs 10 and verse 7 says, the memory of the just is blessed, but the name of the wicked shall rot. We don't name our children Jezebel anymore, do we? Or Judas? Those are rotten names because of their influence. So let's go now to the New Testament. 2 Corinthians chapter 3. And let's read verses 2 and 3. We're talking about influence. 2 Corinthians chapter 3, beginning with verse 2. You are our letter, written in our hearts, known and read by all men, being manifested that you are a letter of Christ, cared for by us, written not with ink, but with the Spirit of the living God, not on tablets of stone, but on tablets of human hearts. So he's basically saying, you let the Lord influence you, and you then influence others, because you are read and known of all men. Did you know that sometimes just a slight influence can make a large difference? I found this to be fascinating. You may want a copy of this illustration. You may want me to even put it in the bulletin next week. It's entitled, Two Drops of Rain. Two drops of rain falling side by side were separated a few inches by a gentle breeze. There was that influence. Striking on opposite sides of the roof of a courthouse in Wisconsin, one rolled southward through the Rock River and the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico, while the other entered successively the Fox River, Green Bay, Lake Michigan, the Straits of Mackinac, Lake Huron, St. Clair River, Lake St. Clair, Detroit River, Lake Erie, Niagara River, Lake Ontario, the St. Lawrence River, and finally reached the Gulf of St. Lawrence. And just as that little bit of influence back there caused a vast difference later, so you can exert a tremendous influence that will make a difference later on. I've already intimated that our influence can last beyond our lifetime, but there's another passage. Micah 6 and verse 16 says, for all the statutes of Omri are kept, and all the works of the house of Ahab, ye walk in their counsels. When Micah wrote these words in Micah chapter 6, Omri had been dead for 2 centuries. Omri had been dead for 200 years and Ahab for about 170 years. And yet they were still following the influences of these men about the same amount of time that our nation has been in existence. Isn't that something? They were having an influence. And I'm suggesting that we can have an influence also. Hebrews 11 verse 4 says, Abel, being dead, yet speaks. And so that's just simply saying you can keep on having influence. Now then, what we need is a godly influence. We need to determine my influence is going to be for good. First of all, in the home, there is a Broadway play that for many years was on Broadway entitled Death of a Salesman. You probably at least have heard of that. It's a highly successful play. I read an article on that as I was preparing for this very sermon. And that article said that the play in the first part of the play shows how a father, a salesman, who is the father of 2 sons, is idolized by his sons until they learn that he's not the same man on the road that he is at home. In that case, the death of the salesman was not physical, but it was tragic because it was a death of him in the hearts of his boys. Now we're talking influence. Now we're talking the need for influence at home. I want you to now imagine a 10 to 12 year old young man coming up to his daddy and throwing his arms around his daddy as only a very impressionable young man can do. And in that tender moment, he thanks his daddy for giving him food and clothes and taking him to the ball game last night. Then he looks into his eyes and he says, but daddy, what have you done to help me get to heaven? And fathers, and I can tell things got quiet.
Fathers, I think those words need to ring in your ears. What have you done to help your children get to heaven? I found a piece of plastic clay and idly fashioned it one day. As my fingers pressed it still, it moved and yielded to my will. I came again when days had passed. The piece of clay was hard at last. The form I gave it, it still bore, but I could change that form no more. I took a piece of living clay and gently formed it day by day, and molded with my power and art a young child's soft and yielding heart. I came again when years had gone. Was a man I looked upon. He still that early impress bore, but I could change him nevermore. You see, I want to have a good influence, but not always have I had. And not always am I happy with what I see. Let me tell you, you're going to be tested. You're going to be watched. And you need to determine that you're going to have an influence. I want to give you a true story of a mother. And I have heard of this all my life, but I had not found documentation for it. In my files and been there for years. It came out in the Christian Woman of October 1966. There was a gospel meeting many years ago in a country community in Oklahoma. And the preacher came and preached for 3 weeks. And one 12-year-old girl was all that was converted. The church was disappointed, and the preacher too, and the preacher was not asked to come back. Years later, that young girl married, and then she was widowed with 6 sons to raise. And then her sister died, leaving a son, J.B. Nelson, whom she took into her home. Those 6 boys grew up to become the famous Dunn preachers. And I've heard of the Dunn preachers all my life. And J.B. Nelson preached for half a century. He baptized literally hundreds of people and was superintendent of Bowles Children's Home at the time he was killed in a train accident. Several of her grandsons now preach. Was that meeting a failure? And that's what drives me when I see a 10 and 12-year-old boy or girl. I never know what kind of influence they can have. People, we got to open our eyes. They're important. And we began to exert influence on those young people. But let you also realize, you have influence at work, at play, at school. People are watching you. One time there was a woman, a young woman, who became tired, weary of the harassment she was getting at work. She was the only Christian there, apparently. And she was receiving taunts and jeers and all of that. She told her preacher she was thinking about quitting her job. And he then said, "Where do you put lights?" She didn't understand. She said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Answer my question. Where do you put lights?" She said, "In a dark place." He said, "That's why you're there." And she went back and led 9 people to the Lord. She changed her attitude. She realized she could be an influence to them and became light for them. Among all of our associates, we need to understand that we are being watched. I have here a story of a young preacher boy who went out and he preached. He caught the bus the next day, and when he got on the bus, he handed the driver his money, and he went back, got his change, went back and counted, and the driver had given him a dime too much change. The first impulse was, bus company will never miss that. And then he thought, no, it's not mine. So he went back up and he gave the bus driver, he says, you gave me the wrong change. And the bus driver says, I know it. I did it on purpose. I was watching you in a back mirror. And if you had put that in your pocket, I would have never believed in preaching again. See, I heard your sermon yesterday. People, you never know when people are watching you. Let me tell you another true story. And this girl never knew she influenced a young man. Young man had had a drinking problem. At a banquet, they were offered drinks. The wine was smelling real good, and he was very tempted. When he heard a young woman says, no thank you, and he thought, I'm going to watch her. If she takes a drink, I will. And through the night, every time she was offered, she would say, no thank you. He didn't drink. She never knew. She pulled him through. You never know when you're influencing other people, and they are watching you. And I think we just need to understand that the Lord is watching us. Bill Gothard says, do you know why many people do not become Christians? He says there's two reasons. One is because they've never seen a Christian, and one is because they've seen those who say they are Christians. Now, as people watch you, do they see a genuine Christian? Are they influenced genuinely by the positive things they see you doing? Now, they're going to try you. It's just like the man that said, and this later came out. Man came up to the person who claimed to be a Christian, and he says, hey, put a quarter in the pot. You know, they was going to have some kind of a deal for games. Football, basketball, something. I don't know what it was. And the man said, no, I don't have a quarter. And the man said, well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll put the quarter in for you. You can give it to me later. I mean, he was really pressing him. Finally got the Christian back in the corner. And he says, I'm sorry, but I don't want to gamble. You can imagine the man's surprise when he says, I knew that. I just wanted to see if you would. You know, people are going to be checking you out. Are you genuine? Are you for real? Are you going to take a stand? And let me also tell you that people are going to be watching you. There was a man who owned a gas station, but he wouldn't shut it down on the Lord's Day. And on this particular Lord's Day, he happened to have a customer that he thought it was time to tell him about how wonderful the church was. Wrong thing to do. Because that customer says, if you think it's so great, why aren't you there? You know, he lost more by his example and his influence than he ever gained by his trying to teach someone. Because his life did not correlate. I mean, it just didn't mesh. We've got to recognize that we've got to influence others also by our lives. You never know how you can influence people. I'm going to tell you another true story, and I know this is true because I know two of the men that are being talked about here, and I'll name their names at the end. 32-year-old Bill Smith began his work in the church in Holdenville, Oklahoma in the mid-50s. According to some, it was a small church and it wasn't much of a work. But he enmeshed himself in the work, and in that congregation there was a half dozen young men, and he impressed them with the importance of being full-time Christians regardless. He talked to them about how they would become the leaders and the preachers of the church of tomorrow. He taught them to cope with everyday problems. 20 years passed. All six are full-time Christians. Two are full-time preachers. One is an official at Oklahoma Christian. One is a missionary. One is a biblical language scholar. And one is a businessman whose passion is to teach and lead people to God. I happen to know that one of those preachers is Bud Ross. And that college official at Oklahoma Christian is Guy Ross. And I went to college with them. I know that story is absolutely true. of the influence Bill Smith had on those boys. And I'm telling you that we can do that in the church. Now turn to 2 Chronicles chapter 24. 2 Chronicles chapter 24. Joash did what was right in the sight of the Lord, verse 2. As long, did you get this? All the days of Jehoiada the priest. All the days of Jehoiada the priest. Good things happened. God's people were brought back from idolatry. The temple was restored and all of those things. And it says in verse 14 that all of that happened. And they offered burnt offerings in the house of the Lord continually all the days of Jehoiada. Here was a man who influenced the king. Here was a good man, Jehoiada. I wish the story ended there. It doesn't. Look at verses 17 and 18. But after the death of Jehoiada, the officials of Judah came and bowed down to the king, and the king listened to them. And they abandoned the house of the Lord, the God of their fathers, and served Asherim and the idols. So wrath came upon Judah and Jerusalem for this their guilt. Oh, we need more Jehoiadas. Let me just also say, my time's up, and I'm trying to cut if you're seeing what I'm doing. God is going to hold us accountable for our influence. One businessman once said, an institution may spread itself over the entire world and may employ 10,000 people, but the average person will form his judgment of it through his contact with one individual. If that one person is rude or inefficient, it will take a lot of kindness and efficiency to overcome his bad impression. Every member of an organization who in any capacity comes in contact with the public is a salesman, and the impression he makes is influential, good or bad. And that is especially true in the church. We need to understand that it is true that God is going to hold us accountable for our influence. One time, little girl came into Bible class, and her dress was dirty. She had this curious little ring around her mouth, and her hair was all messed up. And the teacher says, "What happened to you?" And she explained that on her way, she didn't live very far, and her parents apparently didn't take her. She walked to Bible class. On her way, a little neighbor boy had asked her to blow up this little kind of a little wading pool, and so she had done it, and he started to filling it up with water, and she said, "Well, why don't you come to Bible class with me?" He says, "No, I want to clam a wading pool." Well, she said, "I didn't want God blaming me for him not coming," so there had been a fight. She was letting the air back out of that thing. That's what we need. We need to realize that the Lord is holding us accountable for our influence. Let me just ask you, and my time is up, but let me just ask you seriously, laying all laughing aside now, this is serious business. Have you been hurting the church with your influence? Second question, has your influence been what you want it to be? Third question, do you need to sincerely make some changes? This invitation is for anyone. There may be one who would want to name the name of Christ. There may be another one who would want to simply ask prayers. Whatever your need, we encourage you to come while together we stand and sing.